the epistle that James wrote. We are going to take a few moments to look at one particular verse, and I'm hoping that you'll indulge me this evening, because this has just been a topic and a thought and a verse that has been very much on my mind of late, and I have gained benefit from having re-examined this and thought about its application in my life, particularly because of circumstances that have been in my life recently. I want to read to you a poem. You may have heard this before. It says, "The clock of life is wound but once. No man has the power to tell just when the hands will stop at late or early hour. To lose one's wealth is sad indeed. To lose one's health is more. To lose one's soul is such a loss as no man can restore." Well written, well expressed, very biblical in its thought and in the concepts of that. The sad thing is you read a poem like that and think about its content and think about the passage that we're going to look at in James chapter 4, is that in the amount of time that it took to read that poem, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 40 people died. Since we got up this morning, if you got up, say, around 7, there have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 75,000 people who have died. Latest statistics in 2012 say about 6,300 and some per hour passed from this life. That's sad. And James, in James chapter 4, tells us that there's something we need to grasp about that. And I don't think this is one of those passages that intellectually we struggle with, understanding what it says or even what it means. But I think sometimes we miss some of the point that may go with it. James in chapter 4, in verse 14, these words are recorded for us. "Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow." That was in response to what he called boastfulness on the part of those in verse 13 who said, who you say, "Today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit." And he said, you don't know that. That passage we know we've looked at before. It isn't unfamiliar to us. But he goes on to say, you don't know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. A vapor. Just a mist. Just something that's wispy. And we use phrases like time flies, and we talk about how quickly time passes. As we talk about the amount of time that we've been with this family of Christians at Nashua, that seems almost beyond imagination. That could be 18 years, over 18 years that has been. When we think about our children and our grandchildren, and you start to look at, especially now, your grandchildren, the children don't change drastically, it seems like, between 20 and 30 or 35. They seem to kind of look relatively the same, and so we're thinking we're relatively the same, but the grandkids grow up pretty fast, don't they? You start looking at your grandkids and you think, terrible, terrible thoughts, like you've got one that in about 3 years will be of legal driving age. Those kinds of things are scary when it seems like it was just last year or a couple of years ago that they were being born. But James doesn't say time is flying. James doesn't say time is like a vapor, that time passes quickly. I think he makes a point to say exactly as the psalmist did. He said, you're the vapor. You are. I am. Man is a vapor. Our life is the vapor that he's describing. He's saying our life is something that is just a breath or a wisp. Look at the way the psalmist wrote these same things in Psalm 144. Now, I don't want you to get too far ahead of me in this lesson, in the sense that this is one of those lessons that pretty early on, it's easy to think, good grief. Could there possibly be anything encouraging in this at all?
There is. I think James, and what he says, is trying to get us to get a proper perspective on life, because it is necessary to have the right perspective to be the person that God wants you to be and wants me to be. And so I think he's trying to say, here's what I need you to do. I need you to see life. What is life? How do you answer that question? Life is but a vapor. What does that mean? Where's the benefit in telling us that? If he says you're just a vapor here on this earth, I think James wants us to picture something, to have a perspective like God has.
In Psalm 144 and verse 4, one of the Psalms of David, and he writes, man is like a breath. I mean, those descriptions are vivid. I mean, just imagine, that's what you do. You're just going, he says, that's it. That's what a man is. In perspective of all things, in perspective of eternity, and as you look at eternity, and as God looks at his world, man, he said, is just a breath. Or turn back to Psalm 39. David again writing, says in a very similar fashion, in verse 5, indeed you have made my days as hand breaths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but a vapor. The world struggles with that concept, we know that. And we know that because as you watch how people try to deal with it, the world deals very paradoxically with the whole idea of life and what is past this life. They really, it seems, almost are trying to work both ends of the deal. It's interesting to me that those who should be most concerned about the brevity of life, those that are not in Jesus Christ, are those that seem to be the least concerned about the brevity of life. They live every day in both fashions. I think people have a tendency to live every single day as if there's not going to be any tomorrow at all. And so they're living every day as if there's not going to be a tomorrow, but they're doing everything they can in their life to set their plans and to set their goals and to do the things that they're doing as if that life is never going to come to an end as they establish the priorities in their life. Think about how we try to prolong, how we try to act as if this isn't happening in our lives. You could call up to the lectern if they were here, just as evidence of that, say, how about Joan Rivers? How about a Kenny Rogers? How about a Wayne Newton? Have you seen any of those three lately? They have done so much plastic surgery trying to recapture youth that they're virtually unrecognizable. But they haven't saved a day in doing so. They are acting as if this life isn't continuing to go on. But James is saying, understand something. You can't be snapping for the instant gratification in life, acting as if there is no tomorrow, and at the same time working in this laborious manner to try and stave it off as if you're going to prevent that from ever happening. James says, come now. And that's the way he starts that. Come now. Seriously. I mean, isn't that what he's saying? He's just saying, seriously. You say, tomorrow we're going to do such and such. We're going to go and spend a year. We're going to buy and sell and make a profit. And James is saying, seriously? A year? You're going to plan on being here a year from now? Doesn't work. He says, you need to understand that there's a reason that he's trying to get us to understand that. The same as Moses in the 90th Psalm said, teach us to number our days. There's purpose behind that. There's purpose in understanding that life is our life, you and me. We are just a vapor here. He says there's importance in understanding that. Irma Bombeck, maybe some of you used to read her. She gave the following advice. Seize the moment. She said, remember all those women on the Titanic who waved off the dessert cart.
Well, I understand. That's a humorous approach. But she is saying you do need to understand something about what God is trying to get us to do.
How many people on that ship thought for sure they would see America? And thought they would see another day and thought they would see another year. As God sees it, he says, here's what you ought to say. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, and look where he takes that thought.
He says, if the Lord wills, we shall live.
I think it's interesting that James states it that way. Not only that he states, and we've talked about how important it is that we verbalize those things, to acknowledge to ourselves, to acknowledge to others that we recognize the truth of that. But he says, if the Lord wills, we shall live, and then do this and do that.
Doing this and doing that, all the plans that anybody makes for tomorrow and makes for the next day and makes for next year, all of that is an addendum to the first thing that James says. James says, if the Lord wills, that's where it has to start.
We understand that. Man was lost in a garden when the first Adam said, I will. Man was redeemed in the garden.
On the cross, we understand, but in a garden when Jesus said, the second Adam said, not my will, but your will. That the Spirit is telling us that here is the first step in a life that is Spirit-filled.
Life that is in the Spirit of God recognizes first that not only will God have an effect on what I do tomorrow and beyond, but that God wants me to recognize that every breath that I take is dependent on Him. It's recognition that all life is from Him.
And I can't surrender my will in action to Him until I first recognize that what James is saying, that you ought to be saying, if the Lord wills, I shall live. And then I can do these different things. But I have to understand that surrender to the Lord is recognition that He is absolutely,
absolutely the Lord of every moment by moment breath that I take in this life. And I think that's what James is saying. We sometimes just assume the day is ours. Even though we may seek the Lord's will in what we do with the day, we have a tendency to assume the day. I had conversations, and it's not because we don't recognize this intellectually.
I had conversations with Ralph, I don't know, a couple of times this week as we were talking about his dad and the new diagnosis with his dad and things of that nature. And I can tell you, amazing, even knowing that I was going to be talking about this, amazing how many times in conversation things like this were said. I was talking to him and he said, they went and saw the oncologist today and they got a report. And he said, he's got an appointment and he's going to go see the doctor on Tuesday to get a second opinion. And so I said, when he sees the doctor on Tuesday, send me a text, let me know what that is. And we had conversation that just continued to go on like that. And it's not because intellectually I don't grasp the fact that God, we may or may not. When we're looking into the future, and you've got that out there in that just that sketchy way, all of us intellectually understand, may or may not be here tomorrow. But it is so easy sometimes to assume the day. And I think James is saying, total surrender to the Lord starts off acknowledging that I may or I may not even be here to do His will after I raise my head from whenever I'm praying to Him. And I would have to tell you that I don't always think in terms like that. I know that's intellectually it's there. But am I acknowledging, am I surrendering to Him and first saying, Lord, if You allow me to live to see tomorrow, then help me to do what You want me to do with my life. I think it becomes like children crawling and exploring. And have you ever had a child who knows that there are certain things that are off limits? Maybe there's some trinkets they're not supposed to touch, or maybe they're not supposed to touch the plant, or they're not supposed to touch something else. So a child, you ever had a child that you see crawling across the floor, and a child kind of touches something and then looks back at the parent? Almost as if, here's what I wanted to do. Does that meet with your approval or doesn't it? Yeah, I've already touched the plant. Would you please bless me in doing that? As opposed to doing it the other way around. I think sometimes we're like children crawling. And we make assumptions and we plan the work, we pay the money, we set the goal, we go ahead and do whatever is necessary, we buy whatever we're going to buy, we say whatever we're going to buy, and then kind of like the baby, we look back at God and we're saying, okay, how was that? James is saying you can't do that. James is saying if the Lord wills us to live, then we submit ourselves totally to Him and recognizing that the only reason that we saw the day even dawn is because He allowed us to. We're caught up in a world sometimes that helps us or causes us to believe that we have to press on. We have to set the goals. If you don't, you're going to get walked over. You're not going to get the things that you're planning on getting. You're not going to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. And it's easy sometimes. God says, first, owe your life to Him. Not just your actions, not just your life in action. Owe your life to Him. Do an eternal work. Then He'll bless you. And that's exactly what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6. I never really thought of Matthew chapter 6 as a parallel passage to James chapter 4. Because James is saying, don't plan on tomorrow. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is saying, don't be anxious about tomorrow. But I would tell you, it seems that both have the same cause. I get anxious, and what does that do? It causes me to start that planning. It causes me to start looking toward the worldly things. And Jesus is saying, don't even concern yourself. Don't worry about that. Take care of God first. And Jesus says He'll take care of what He's supposed to take care of.
I think that's what James is telling us as well. And here's why I think that's important. Because there's a tendency to look at this passage and only focus on the look forward. What tomorrow may or may not hold. What the next day may or may not hold. But I think he's trying to get us to understand something about life in general. Why it is critically important to get the right perspective. I think sometimes to do that, it's as much a look backward as it is forward. And he wants you to understand, why would God say life is a vapor? Is God somehow trying to tell you it's insignificant? I don't think so. I think God would have us to believe our lives can be greatly significant. In spite of the fact that they're a vapor, the very fact that they are a vapor should help us to appreciate how significant they can be. What do we do with that time? I know you've heard this particular, I don't know if you'd call it a poem, I think it probably would be referred to that way, but it's about a man preaching a funeral. It says, a pastor stood to speak at the funeral of his friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth, but spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth, and now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend the dash. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be pleased with the things they say about how you spent the dash? I think
that's what God wants us to grasp here. Every day is the dash. If you were to write that out, and because we have Wednesday, but we don't know that we have Thursday. So maybe you might write that out and you put Tuesday. You ever done that? Tuesday through Thursday. And it's just kind of Tuesday-Thursday. What did I do with Wednesday? Because life's a vapor. He says, and I can do something with this. People have changed the world with vapor lives. Moses' life was a vapor. Joseph's life was a vapor. Daniel's life was a vapor. All of those in Hebrews chapter 11, all of their lives were a vapor. And they changed the world with a vapor life. And that's what God is saying. Understand that it's a vapor so you don't
waste what He's given us. I mean, the Scriptures tell us that the average life 70 years. And we know a lot of people don't make it that long. Or maybe by reason of strength, you make it farther than that. Ralph's dad is presently 81. He's gone beyond the 80 years even. And yet his life is still a vapor. I think what God is saying is, it never is an issue of quantity. Value. If everybody's life is a vapor, nobody's life is valuable because of the quantity that we have. Whether it's 10 years, 50 years, or 100 years. None of it has enough quantity to make it of value. But what do you do with it? I think that's what James is saying. And that's why he ends that passage. In verse 17, therefore to him who knows to do good and doesn't do it, he says, your life, it's a vapor. And if you know to do good and don't do it, we're wasting the dash. Jesus said that he came to work the works of him who sent him. That's what he was here about. He said, while it is day, because the night comes when no man can work. Hopefully that's not a depressing lesson. If it is, then I don't know what to do for you, because God's the one who said, life's just a vapor. We understand that. But I think it's God who tells you he can do incredible things with the vapor that is your life and is my life. And if I understand what that little dash is, and if he allows me to see Friday, between now and then, I've got a dash called Thursday. What do I do with the dash that God has given me? That's what life is all about. He says it may be the last dash you get. Use it for God. Make Him the priority. I think that's what James and Jesus were both talking about. James in James chapter 4 here, Jesus in chapter 6 of Matthew. I think both were saying, you got to grab life. And make sure, even as that poem we just read, understand what's true and what's real. Because this world will dupe us into thinking that a lot of things are true and real and valuable. That God said, don't waste your time on that. Take care of His work.
He'll take care of what He's supposed to do. If you're not a Christian, I think God would have you to understand, as all of us understand, life doesn't last forever. We understand that. But life can be incredibly, incredibly high quality when we submit ourselves absolutely, totally to our God and understand that He gave us this moment, this breath we take is only by the will of God that I have that. Once I acknowledge that, then I can submit the rest of my life to Him. If you're not a Christian, He would have you to become one and to make your life worthwhile. Because He says you can have quality of life. A life that is in service to Him, that has promises that are beyond just precious. Great, great promises of God. If you don't know how to become a Christian, talk to us. We'd love to sit down with His Word, open it up, and show you what He says to tell you that you can have this life and serve Him with it. For those of us that are Christians, I don't know about you. I get into that assume mode. If you were to ask me, I would tell you, no, I don't assume tomorrow. But I say things and I do things and I act in ways that show sometimes I assume that. Let's start every day telling God thank you that He gave us the breath of life. And then use the dash to serve Him. If we can help you do that, let us know. While we stand, while we sing.